Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the March 20th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arcola School Board. Crowd presses board to add soccer by Dominic Stallings. Over 20 Arcola High School students and parents attended the Wednesday, March 13th Arcola School Board meeting to show support for starting a high school soccer team. We always wanted a team. I think all these kids here show that. I think any chance we can get, we're all ears, said Landon Marcus, an Arcola High School student. Superintendent Tom Mulligan said the issue of having an Arcola School District soccer team has been discussed several times in past board meetings. He said several feasibility studies have also been conducted to determine whether a school soccer team would be viable. Members of the board said they would like to have a soccer team but are concerned that including one may harm the football program as both sports overlap in the fall. The soccer director for Arcola Rec Youth Sports, Freddie Moreno, attended to support the kids in their wishes. Moreno gave the board some statistics to show how many students are interested in playing soccer. Moreno said they currently have 111 pre-K and up students signed up for soccer. There are 26 kids in the club program, 22 of which are in the school district. Moreno said there are 25 high school athletes signed up for the soccer program and another 19 junior high students. He said that 5 students are playing football, including JFL. Moreno argued that they aren't impacting many of the football numbers. Last year, they had 21 kids sign up for soccer and have seen a drop in kids who are in multiple sports. Besides the number of players, the playing field would need some work done if the school were to have a soccer team. Moreno said that he has donors lined up to pay for that job. He only needs to ask the city for permission. He also said that if funding were an issue, they could set up a soccer booster club to fund the program. The board said another issue would be overall enrollment numbers. Over the last 6 years, enrollment has dropped from 250 to 183 students. If the school had 300 to 400 students, having both programs would be no issue. Mulligan said only a few schools with similar enrollment numbers have a soccer team, namely Fisher and Argenta Orellana. It's hard to start a program, knowing may we ruin another program, said Mulligan. It's not the facility or the money, but it's the number of kids that are able to sustain both programs. Parents at the meeting said they believe the programs could coexist. Soccer, like football, would be another way to promote student growth and development. Moreno wondered if the school could just try a junior varsity schedule and see how it impacts the football program. Junior senior high school principal and athletic director Nick Lindsay said it's difficult because the issue always seems to turn into a football and soccer battle. The board only discussed soccer at Arcola schools. No action was taken concerning the sport. In other news, the board approved the $380,000 bid from Top Quality Roofing Company for replacing the high school gym cafeteria roof. Mulligan said he was pleased with the roofing bids and that the conversations they had about the aggregate on the roof for the upcoming locker room renovations. He also met with an architect and discussed the school's racquetball area and what it would take to expand it. He said the building committee meeting should be held to determine details of all upcoming renovations and ensure the projects are done properly. The board approved an agreement with Parkland College to allow students to receive inexpensive dual credit hours compared to regular college credits. Students in the program can take classes in sociology and psychology. Lindsay said the classes are online and done cooperatively, which makes the tuition inexpensive. The board approved a letter to the city of Arcola notifying that they have met all financial obligations to baseball and softball field construction and renovation in the agreement signed on May 11, 2022. The board approved the 2023 federal single audit report. The report is required because the district received over $750,000 in federal funds in 2023. Mulligan said there will likely be one more report next year. He said he was pleased with the previous report since there were no findings and it was easy to comply. Mulligan commented that the cost of audits has risen dramatically. The just approved audit cost the district $11,000. For the 2024-25 school year, the district will participate in a purchasing cooperative for all cafeteria food. Mulligan said he's been tracking cafeteria participation rates and will have more data by April or May. He said the number have been up so far compared to last year. Lindsay said the district will host the baseball regional this season, which is a good opportunity for the school to show off its new facilities. Lindsay said those interested can see pictures of the renovated baseball field on the city's Facebook page. Finally, Mulligan said that A Kids, a new nonprofit organization, is having a breakout committee. They're looking at the community center and the feasibility of getting grants for a local daycare center partnered with gym recreation. The board approved the minutes, treasurer's report, and the payment of $276,000 in bills and $552,000 in payroll. The board approved Greg Braspier's resignation as a permanent substitute and Mitch Pollock's hiring as an elementary education teacher for the 2024-25 school year. Arcola City Council, no new liquor licenses at this time, by Dave Porter. The Police, Ordinance, and Enforcement Committee of the Arcola City Council decided Monday against setting rules for video gaming in the city. The reasoning was that the city already limits liquor licenses, and establishments that have gaming must also have liquor licenses. Thus, the number of establishments for gaming is already limited by the number of liquor licenses. We might be picking a fight we don't have to, said Bill Wagoner, city administrator. The committee also agreed to leave the number of Class A and B licenses, which are for restaurants and bars, at 7, which are all in use. Matt Henson, committee chairman, said he's comfortable leaving the number as is, with the understanding that the city can revisit the limit if someone wants to open a bar or restaurant in town with a liquor license. Wagoner said there's been discussion about an establishment opening at Green Mill Village. It's pie in the sky, he said, but having another license could speed up the process. There reportedly are no applications for new liquor licenses currently. The committee did agree to add a new provision called a pour license within the Class C division. That license would allow a convenience store that is permitted to sell packaged liquor to have a gaming license, which would allow for open alcohol only in the gaming area. The add-on license fee would make it identical in cost to a Class A or B license. During the discussion on gaming, Alderman Brent Budd expressed concern about additional gaming, stating that video slots are more addictive than other types of gaming. However, he said he thought it would not be fair to allow some businesses to have gaming and not others. Alderman Joe Becerra noted that people can gamble on their phones, and Alderman Terry Foran suggested that Illinois Lottery takes more money out of the city than on-site video gambling. It was also noted that Jack Flash is not subject to the city's regulation because of the volume of diesel fuel it sells. Wagoner said that if a truck stop has 5 acres and meets the criteria for diesel sales, it is governed by state law, not local ordinance. During the regular council meeting, the city voted to distribute surplus tax increment financing, TIF, funds to the various taxing bodies in the city. When the city extended the life of its TIF districts, it agreed to disperse surplus funds annually to the other taxing bodies, which includes the city itself. In TIF 1, $127,000 will be distributed. The largest amount, $65,000, will go to the school district. Other amounts are as follows: County, $12,000; County Museum, $283; Arcola Fire Protection District, $9,000; Parkland College, $8,000; Arcola Library District, $2,600; Arcola Township, $7,000; Arcola Township Road District, to be split 50-50 with the city, $11,500; City of Arcola, $11,100. In TIF 2, $174,000 will be distributed as follows: County, $16,800; County Museum, $338; Arcola Fire, $12,000; Parkland College, $10,900; Arcola Library, $3,700; Arcola Township, $9,600; Arcola Township Road District, to be split with the city, $15,800; Arcola Schools, $89,800; and the City of Arcola, $15,000. The council also approved a lease of a Vermeer VX50 VAC trailer. First Bank is funding the $132,000 lease. The city will own the equipment at the end of the lease. The Villa Grove City Council finishing up moving City Hall to Harrison. The Villa Grove City Council met on March 12th for their regular voting meeting, with Alderman Derek Johnson and Matthew Pangburn absent. After stating the Pledge of Allegiance, asking for public comments, and finding none, Mayor Cassandra Eversole Gunter called for the vote on the consent agenda, which included minutes of the February 12th regular meeting and the February 24th Committee of the Whole meeting. The consent agenda also included the payment of bills in the amount of $650,000, along with the financial reports for the month ending January 31st and the cash balance report for the month ending February 29th. Also included was pay requisition number 20 for Bruin Rosso in the amount of $400,000 and the payment of $7,500 to CMI for their invoice for materials. Administrator Jackie Athey then made her report, noting that she was in the process of finishing the move to City Hall from their Main Street location to their new permanent office on East Harrison Street. She noted that an online meeting with the TIF consultants was scheduled, and they would be discussing TIF 2 and its rollout, which estimated to be about 4 months after the TIF is developed. Finally, In Chief Roberts Ree's absence, she reported that two new officers were now patrolling on their own and would allow all officers to work 8-hour shifts instead of the 10-hour shifts they had been working. Public Works Director Mark McSell then noted that his staff had completed the City Hall move and they had nearly finished repainting and installing sound dampening boards in the Zest for Life Center. He also noted that he was in the process of attaining a quote for the ZFL parking lot and the Ball Diamonds would be drug and pre-emergent herbicide applied in the coming weeks. He noted that the bids for the Harrison Street Bridge repairs would be opened on March 18th and the bridge would be expected to be one lane for 6 to 10 weeks or longer, depending on weather. Finally, he noted that Public Works was working with Athey to utilize a substantial Ameren credit for future lighting projects. Mayor Evisar Gunter then made a short report to the CPS director, Bethany Sarovska's absence, noting that all city buildings were ready for the 317 open house. The city then moved to new business, approving a revised ordinance prohibiting the use of groundwater as potable water supply by the installation of wells or any other method. Next, they approved a variance request for A&R sales and transfers to be located at 1022 North Fox Run after representatives of A&R explained the nature of their firearms business. The council then approved the purchase of outdoor cameras for the community center, the treasurer's attendance at the IMTA summer conference, RT graphics and printing quote for reflective signage for fire vehicles, the waiving of a formal bid process for the re-roofing of the Harrison Street city property, and hiring of an engineer for consultation regarding the North End development plan. All motions were approved unanimously, other than Alderman Blaney's no vote on the new reflective signage for the fire vehicles. The council then moved to closed session at 6:36 p.m., emerging at 7:14 p.m. Finding no other business, Alderman Tony Hooker motioned the adjournment at that time. Villa Grove School Board passed $800,000 bond to pay for windows by Dominic Stallings. The Villa Grove School Board approved an $800,000 general obligation bond during its March 18th meeting. The bond will be used to install new windows at Villa Grove High School. Villa Grove State Bank won the bid for the bond at 4.5% interest rate. According to documents provided by the board, the 4-year bond will accrue $99,000 in interest. Superintendent Dr. Carol Munson explained that the bond will be paid back by the local 1% sales tax. The school won't raise the property tax levy to pay for the bond. A representative from Stifel Public Finance said the school's last alternate revenue bond has 6 years left until it is paid off. The board approved the purchase of a public official bond, Barbara Alexander, regarding the Alternative Revenue Source Bond Series 2024. In other news, Elizabeth Nieto and Bridget Taylor from the Careers Committee showed the bond the success of the first Career Day at Villa Grove Schools, which was held on March 1st. Students were suggested career clusters through Zello, a sort of test they took in the fall. Students had 4 sessions with community members from different career categories, such as infotech, arts and communications, business, legal, healthcare, and more. Afterward, students took a survey to gauge what kind of improvement that could be made to the event. There was also a college fair with 27 exhibits in addition to the 31 career representatives available. 4 trades, including the LIFT program, were also available. Taylor said they would like to include more trades in next year's Career Day, as many of them don't know they could be speakers. The National Guard, Army, Air Force, and Marines were also available at Career Day. Nieto said the overall event was a success. Many students showed interest and were able to find out about careers they had no idea existed in the first place. Student response was varied, but some students believed the event could be longer and even more in-depth, allowing for more one-on-one time with each presenter, college, or trade. Next year, I feel we need to have longer sessions to have more time to interact more with the professionals. I asked a lot of questions throughout the presentation, but I feel there needs to be more time to ask questions and dig deeper into the careers. I also feel we need to try to encourage larger colleges to come so there's more variety. Overall, it was a great experience, said one freshman. Some students wish they could have chosen a presentation if the results from Zella placement weren't what they expected. Since it was the first time holding the event, there are areas of growth the school is working toward. In the future, the committee hopes to have a career day in the fall and job shadowing in the spring so students can see different careers up close. They also hope to have a longer day. This first year was an 11:30 a.m. dismissal, have an open session where students can meet with presenters to ask questions, allow students to select one or two rooms with presenters, make the programs more similar to the 8th grade Parkland Career Day. The committee also hopes to have a short faculty meeting the week off of to ensure staff are prepared. Likewise, students will be provided a schedule to be better prepared for the day. The board approved the membership for renewal for IHSA and IESA. The board approved the approval of the consent agenda, which consisted of the approval of minutes and closed session minutes, payment of bills, and the treasurer's report. The board accepted the resignation of John Woolley, Hannah Albus, and Christine Porcayo. And the Arthur School Board, fees go up, approve a bid for parking lot by Ariana Cherry. Superintendent Sharon Cheek presented the winning bid to repair the Lovington Grade School parking lot at the most recent Arthur CUSD No. 305 School Board meeting held March 13th. The winning bid was from Dunn Construction in the amount of $437,000, which included $35,000 allowance. Cheek informed the board that the bid came in about $5,000 less than what had originally been estimated. The work also includes the replacement of the sidewalks and curbs that lead to the building. It's really needed and long overdue. We hope that the work is done before school starts for the next school year. It's been a long time coming, commented Cheek. It was also announced that fees will be increasing for the 2024-25 school year. According to Cheek's research, prices have stayed pretty consistent since the 2014-15 school year, aside from lunch fees. While the prices will increase, they will still be lower than several of the surrounding school districts. Cheek stated that most fees see about a $5 to $10 increase. Other items were discussed or voted upon included work on the Arthur Grade School bathrooms has started with planned completion before the end of the school year. The district is in the planning stage for tentative open houses of the school buildings for the public. Cheek also stated he is planning to do some public surveys to get an overall insight of where their thoughts are and if the district should create another referendum for the next election. I'm excited to start having these conversations again, he said. Cheek and the board expressed their appreciation for Krista Nall and her dedication to the school district for the last 16 years. We're very sorry to lose you and we don't want you to be a stranger. You're valued and you will always be a knight, he said. Nall will be taking a position as an associate director with EIASE Special Education Cooperative. Several students from Lovington Grade School came to share their literacy progress and how they've improved from the beginning of the year to now. Thanks to the efforts of the staff and the motivation of the students, many of them have come a long way. A total of $4,900 in donation were received. One of the donations was in memory of Michael and Mary Rutledge in the amount of $4,700 to put a book vending machine. The total of all the funds from the most recent bank statement was $13,600,000. The balance for the education fund was $1.2 million. Building fund was $500,000, and the transportation fund was $112,000. Personnel report certified. Consider accepting Heather Taylor's resignation from teaching at Arthur Grade School. Consider accepting Krista Nall's resignation as special education coordinator. Non-certified, consider accepting Sabrina Bettinger's resignation from a paraprofessional to position of LAAH High School. Consider approving Mariposa McGee as a custodian at the Atwood Hammond Grade School. And extracurricular, consider accepting Brad McGill's resignation from ALAH High School Head Boys Basketball Coach. Consider approving Faiza Farsa for the position of volunteer assistant to the JH Track Program. Another first page article, psych evaluation ordered for Tuscola murder suspect by Dominic Stallings. Joshua M. Henderson, 42, was charged with first degree murder after he was arrested at 2:34 p.m. on March 13th at the 400 South Park Street in Tuscola. One person died of stab wounds. According to the probable cause affidavit, Henderson allegedly stabbed or sliced Philip B. Sanders 3 or 4 times in his neck, chest, and hand, killing him. Henderson was denied pretrial release due to posing a risk to the public and himself. He'll be in custody until his next court date at 1 p.m. on April 15th. According to the probable cause affidavit, Tuscola officer Dalton Dunnels approached the apartment building at 2:31 p.m. He said Henderson began yelling at him as he approached him, appearing shirtless and with blood on his chest. He reportedly concealed an 8-inch knife covered in blood behind his arm. Dunnels wrote that he drew his firearm and ordered Henderson to drop the knife, which Henderson did. After ordering Henderson out of the apartment, Henderson became aggressive and moved toward Donald's while balling his fist. Donald's used his taser on Henderson twice. The two struggled and fought for 2 minutes until Donald's was finally able to hold Henderson on his stomach until his backup, Lieutenant Heath Thurston, arrived. Sanders was later found dead on top of the stairwell in the apartment building. Douglas County Coroner Lisa Edwards, Tuscola Chief of Police Craig Hastings, and Sheriff Nathan Chaplin later arrived on the scene to assist. Henderson apparently Henderson appeared in court on March 14th through Zoom for his detention hearing. According to a statement by Chaplin, Henderson was considered a danger to staff and himself. He said Henderson referred to correctional officers as demons. In the detention order, the court received reports of mental health instability. The document noted that Henderson said that he has an irresistible urge to inflict bodily harm to rip apart the victim. Chaplin wrote that Henderson intentionally urinated on an officer upon admission. In an email to Circuit Judge Kate Wilson, jail administrator Caitlin Run described Henderson as a maniac and believes all law enforcement are the who believes that all law enforcement are the devil and that Armageddon is coming. She said she contacted a mental health facility in Austin, Texas, which prescribed medicine to Henderson that was found on the scene. Chaplin also wrote that Henderson refused to cooperate with booking procedures, including medical information and a photo. According to Chaplin, Henderson allegedly tore out the camera in his holding cell shortly before his detention hearing. Henderson was constrained for the detention hearing held over Zoom. Henderson appeared to yell at the court during the hearing when he was read his rights. Watson said he appeared to be mentally unstable and unable to understand his rights or what was happening in the court. Henderson said he wanted to appeal his detention but did not understand how to do so. Due to his continued yelling and remarks at the court, Henderson was muted on Zoom for most of the hearing. On March 15th, public defender Kevin Nolan, who was appointed to represent Henderson, filed a motion for the appointment of a psychologist to examine Henderson. With no objection from state's attorney Robert Kosick, the court determined that a bona fide doubt has been raised as to the defendant's fitness to stand trial. The court also found that Henderson had a previous conviction for assault with a deadly weapon, which resulted in a prison term. It is unclear when or where or how long this term was. Henderson was charged with two Class M felonies, one for alleged murder with intent to kill, and another for alleged murder with the probability to kill or injure. Watson said a potential sentence may result in 20 to 60 years in prison with no chance for parole for both charges, and up to $25,000 fine for each charge. Henderson was also charged with two Class 3 felonies, one for alleged aggravated battery with great bodily harm, and the other for alleged aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. Both charges could result in 5 years in prison. We'll move now to the obituaries. Lawrence Larry Gardner, 77, of Jefferson, Georgia, suddenly passed away on March 15, 2024. His loss is entirely unexpected, and his family is profoundly saddened. A drop-in reception will be held at the Jackson County Historic Courthouse, 85 Washington Street, Jefferson, Georgia, on Thursday, March 21st from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Evans Funeral Home, Jefferson, Georgia, is entrusted with the arrangements. Margaret A. LaCrone, 91, of Villa Grove, passed away on Saturday, March 16, 2024, at Tuscola Health Care Center in Tuscola. A visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. on Wednesday, March 27th at the Joins Funeral Home in Villa Grove, with a funeral service beginning at 11 a.m. Pastor Zach LaCrone will officiate. Burial will follow at the Hugo Cemetery. Robert G. Schuster, 89, of Tuscola, passed away at 10:54 a.m. Thursday, March 14th, 2024 at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Massive Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 20th at the 40 Martyrs Catholic Church, 201 East Van Allen Street, Tuscola, with Father Vargens Puthusri as a celebrant. Burial will follow in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the Mass at the church. Cody Evan Gingrich, 29, of rural Levington, passed away at 6:22 p.m. on Monday, March 11th, 2024, from injuries sustained in a vehicle accident. Visitation was held Thursday, March 14th at the Arthur Southern Baptist Church. The funeral was held Friday, March 15th at the church. Pastor Doug Davis officiated. Interment followed in the Keller Cemetery in rural Levington. The Edwards Funeral Home in Arcola assisted the family. Robert Mann, 74, of Carthage, North Carolina, formerly of Camargo, died Friday, March 1st, 2024 at Spring Hill, Tennessee. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. May 27th at Joins Funeral Home, 1275 Illinois 130 Villa Grove. Burial will be in the Camargo Cemetery, Camargo. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. May 27th at the funeral home. Another article, Jobs Up in Champaign-Urbana Area, out of Springfield. Over the year, total non-farm jobs increased in 8 metropolitan areas, decreased in 5, and was unchanged in 1 for the year ending January 2024, according to data released today by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Over the year, the unemployment rate increased in all 14 metropolitan areas. As payrolls continue to grow across industries throughout the state, job seekers are encouraged to take advantage of new and expanded employment opportunities, said Deputy Governor Andy Menard. IDES and its workforce partners are uniquely positioned to assist with unemployment searches and to match workers with employers to ensure that they get the best fit for their needs. The metro areas which had the largest over-the-year percentage increase in total non-farm jobs are the Bloomington MSA, Champaign-Urbana, and Carbondale-Marion. The metro areas which had the largest over-the-year percentage decreases were Springfield, Decatur, and the Davenport-Moline Rock Island. Total non-farmer jobs in the Chicago Metro Division were down 0.3% or 11,000. Industries that saw job growth in majority of metro areas included education and health services and government, 12 areas each, and financial activities, 8 areas. The metro areas with the largest unemployment rate increases were in Decatur and Kankakee, and the Rockford, the Chicago Metro Division unemployment rate increased by 0.1% to 4.5%. Champaign-Urbana MSA. The non-seasonally adjusted unemployment rate increased to 4.6% in January 2024 from 4% in January 2023. Non-farm employment increased by 2,500 compared to last January. Education, health services, leisure, hospitality, and retail, trade and manufacturing, mining, construction, financial activities, and government had payroll increases over the year. The professional business services and transportation warehousing industries had unemployment declines from a year ago. The Danville MSA, the not seasonally adjusted unemployment rate increased to 6.6% in January 2024 from 6% in January 2023. Total non-farm employment was unchanged from last January. Education, health services, leisure, hospitality were the only sectors that had payroll gains over the year. The manufacturing, wholesale trade, and government sectors had unemployment declines from a year ago. Note, monthly 2023 unemployment rates and total non-farm jobs at Illinois metro areas were revised in February and March 2024 as required by the USBLS. Comments and tables distributed for prior metro area news should be discarded as any records or historical analysis provided may no longer be valid. As a disclaimer, the data contained in the metro area employment numbers press releases are not seasonally adjusted and therefore are subject to seasonal fluctuations due to factors such as changes in weather, harvests, major holidays, and school schedules. Current monthly metro data should be compared to the same month from the prior years, as data for these months have similar seasonal patterns. Comparison should not be made to data for the immediate previous month or other previous non-matching months, as any changes in the data within these time periods may be the result of seasonal fluctuations. Lakeland increases tuition costs. The Lakeland College Board of Trustees approved the first tuition increase in 4 years on Monday. The increase follows 4 years of commitment to hold tuition as steady as possible for students. Tuition and fees remained the same between fiscal years 21 and 22, and then decreased 7.4% for fiscal year 23. Last year, tuition and fees were rolled back to the fiscal year 2021-2022 rates. Lakeland College is committed to delivering a high-quality education to our students while remaining one of the most affordable educational choices in the state of Illinois, Lakeland President Josh Bullock said. As we are beginning to plan the fiscal year 2025 budget, we're working diligently to balance our budget and sustain the high value of a Lakeland College education. The new tuition rate will be equal to $113 per credit hour, a $3 tuition increase compared to the previous rate. Fees will be increased by a total of $1.50 per credit hour, bringing Lakeland's total per credit cost to $147 at the beginning of the 2024 term. A full-time student taking 30 credit hours per year will have a total tuition and fees bill of $4,400 for the school year, which includes the college book rental program. This is about one-third of a typical state university tuition and fees bill, the school said. Lakeland College continues to offer some of the lowest tuition and fee rates among community colleges in the state of Illinois, making higher education accessible to all and providing pathways for career advancement without the weight of student debt, the school said. A breakdown of college tuition and fees are available on the Lakeland College website at lakelandcollege.edu/tuition-and-fees. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying I will goodbye for now, and I'll see you again next week.